How can you control your emotions so completely that nothing rattles you? Is that even a healthy goal to pursue? We'll take a look at the emotions of your life from an angle that you may have never considered. Next on Grace to You. You make decisions. The world tells you to let your emotions lead, to follow your heart, to go with your gut. But is that really the best way to live life? How does God want you, if you're a Christian, to deal with and use your emotions? John MacArthur considers the role of emotions today on Grace to You as he continues his series from Philippians. It's titled Joy Rules. Before the lesson, John, Thanksgiving holiday, well, it's later this week, so talk a little bit about your holiday plans and what might be on the agenda this coming Thursday.
Well, I think we're like everybody else. A traditional Thanksgiving is a family event, and we've always felt that Thanksgiving is our favorite holiday. It's not cluttered. Christmas is long, drawn out, cluttered with all kinds of stuff that has nothing to do with the birth of Christ. And even when you think about resurrection time, or as it's called, Easter, the confusion and chaos of rabbits and eggs and whatever else is going on, and dresses and hats, and there's something about Thanksgiving that is just uncluttered. Nobody's buying presents, nobody's racing around shopping, and it's not a high event time. People don't plan events, for 2 weeks leading up to Thanksgiving. So it kind of sneaks up on you in a quiet way. It's always been my favorite family time. The weather is beautiful, cool air even out here in California, and it just seems a wonderful time to come together for no other reason than because we belong together, we love each other, and we all want to express our thanks to the Lord. I want to say thank you this year, outside our family, to you folks who are partners in prayer with us at Grace to You. Thank you for your letters, your notes, your cards. Thank you for your encouragement. I just scanned over some beautiful expressions of gratitude from you. Thank you for your thank yous. They come by the bag load. Thank you for thanking the Lord for us. It's God who sustains this ministry, but He's doing it through you.
Thanks, John. And friend, as you prepare for Thanksgiving, for time with your family and friends, as well as the hustle and bustle of the upcoming Christmas season, stay tuned now as John MacArthur explains how love can motivate you in any circumstance to honor God and serve others. Listen now as John continues the study, Joy Rules.
Philippians chapter 1. We're looking at verses 9 through 11, Paul's prayer for the believers. He writes, "And this I pray, that your love may abound still more and more in real knowledge and all discernment, so that you may approve the things that are excellent, in order to be sincere and blameless until the day of Christ, having been filled with the fruit of righteousness, which comes through Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God." Now, in this prayer, which Paul prays for the Philippian Christians, he focuses on the essentials for sound spiritual health. He's focusing on the features of true spirituality, elements of spiritual life which every Christian must pursue: love, excellence, integrity, good works, and glory. In fact, in some ways, you could sum up the Christian life in those five terms: love, excellence, integrity, good works, and glory. Now, we began our study by looking at verse 9 and considering the first of these five essentials, namely love. Verse 9 says, "This I pray, that your love may abound still more and more in real knowledge and all discernment." All of Christian living begins with love. Everything in our Christian experience must be built on a foundation of love. In fact, the whole text of verses 9 to 11 is sequential. Love leads to excellence, which leads to integrity, which leads to good works, which leads to the praise and glory of God. So love is the great foundation of Christian living. It is the most surpassing virtue of the Christian life and really the distinctive of our faith. God loves us, we love God, and in that context, we love each other and are loved by each other. True godliness begins with love. In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, Paul writes, "If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I have become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. And if I give all my possessions to feed the poor, and if I deliver my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing." Love is the sine qua non of Christianity. Paul then prays that the love of the Philippians and us would abound more and more in all real knowledge and all discernment. He prays for our increasing love. It is divine love, indicated by the fact that he asks God for it. It comes from God, not man. It is de facto love. They already have it in an abundance, and he wants them to have more and more of it. It is decisive love. The word agape means the love of the will or the love of choice, not emotion. It is dynamic love. It abounds more and more, increasing and overflowing. It is deep love in that it is rooted in deep spiritual knowledge and understanding. And it is discerning love in that it has insight into all the situations of life and knows how it should be applied. So this love is not an unregulated impulse. It is biblical, discerning, discriminating service rendered to others in need, even if it means sacrifice. It is not an emotion, it is a duty. It is an act of selfless sacrifice in behalf of someone else. It cannot be reduced to a sociological phenomenon. It cannot be reduced to an emotional feeling. The key to it is selflessness. The key to it is humility. The key to it is to be lost in meeting the needs of others. And the people who really love are committed to others, unselfish, gracious to meet others' needs, no matter who they are and no matter what the need might be. Everything begins with love. So Paul prays for a heart of love. Now let's go on to the rest of the excellencies, the essentials of spiritual life. The second is excellence. Notice again in verse 10, "so that you may approve the things that are excellent." Now, do you notice the sequence there? This feature deals with the sense of priority and follows on the first essential, namely love. The two little words, "so that," are the link and show us there's a progression in view here. Where a person is literally dominated by the love of God, there will be a corresponding desire to seek and approve what is excellent. Why? Because that true love is controlled by the deep knowledge of the Word, which enables the Christian to be completely discerning and discriminating, and that leads him to a pursuit of what is excellent. So he says, "so that," verse 10, "you may approve the things that are excellent." You can't do it without that pervasive love, that attitude of commitment that the Bible calls biblical love. Now, the word "approve" is a very interesting and important word, dokimazo. It's very familiar in the New Testament. It was used in classical Greek for assaying metal to determine its properties and its purity. It was used for testing money to be sure that it wasn't counterfeit. In Luke 14, 19, it is used of testing the quality of animals, namely oxen. And in Luke 12, 56, it is used of assessing the state of the sky or analyzing the weather. So it has to do with testing to verify or to prove or to determine something. And what he is saying here is that my prayer for you is that you would have the capability to evaluate and determine the things that are excellent. Now, the Greek, diaphero, means literally to differ, referring to the things that are excellent, to differ. In other words, so that you'll know the difference between things and be able to determine what is most important. The idea, then, is to be able to set proper value on things. What is valuable, what is not valuable, what is more valuable, what is most valuable. What is worthwhile, what is vital, what is excellent. What is the thing that really matters? Now listen carefully. It is not the ability to distinguish between good and bad. Everybody can do that. It is the ability to distinguish between good and best. And only a few seem to be able to do that. The discernment that assesses what is best. So crucial. Being able to take your life and focus your time and your energy on what really matters. Approving what is excellent. Testing, assaying, assessing, proving, approving what is most significant. And listen, the ability to do that is what separates the simple from the profound, the weak from the powerful, and the common from the influential. Those profound, powerful, influential people are those people who have ability to focus their life on some excellent goal. And they are not dissuaded or detracted by things that are less than excellent. Now, this is a prayer for the mind, by the way. You might even say the first one, a prayer for love, was a prayer for the heart. This is a prayer for the mind. Because you cannot pursue what is excellent unless you can assess what is excellent. This is the challenge to me of life, is having the ability to pursue what is most noble and best. And that's just not how most people are. Most people are like the proverbial bouncing ball. They just react. They react. It's that they're a knee-jerk kind of lifestyle. They just do whatever impulse, emotion, mood tells them, or they simply react to the environment around them. They don't control the environment, and they don't control their response to the environment. In fact, they don't think, they just react. Most people live off their moods. They don't control themselves, their selves control them. They don't think at all. They can't pursue unhindered and undistracted what is excellent because they can't think and control their thought patterns to the degree that they can assess what is excellent. They react. It's tragic, but most people live in reaction to everything around them, like a bouncing ball bouncing off every wall they hit in whatever direction they have the freedom to go. There was an interesting educational study done in which people were given new concepts. In other words, a man came in and gave these people a new concept, something they had never heard of before, and asked them to believe it. And knowing that in asking them to believe it, they would have to set aside some of the things they had previously thought were true. The results were interesting. 50% of the people believed it immediately, without thinking. 30% of the people didn't believe it immediately without thinking. 15% of the people wanted to wait a little while before they made up their mind, but asked for no clarification and no further information and then made up their mind. 5% of the people analyzed all the details and finally came to a conclusion. And the result of the test goes something like this. It is estimated that 5% of the people think. 15% of the people think they think, and 80% of the people would rather die than think. That's how it is in the world. That's how it is. They don't want to think. People don't think. And they don't know how to approve what is excellent because they can't control their mind because their emotions control their mind. And they just react. See, people live by emotion. They don't live by thinking. But as Christians, if we're going to pursue what is excellent, we have to have mind over mood. You cannot be a victim of your emotions and your moods if you're going to pursue what is excellent. In Romans, you're familiar with that wonderful 12th chapter and second verse, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. You've got to renew your mind. You have to get your thinking in order. That's why in Philippians 4, Paul says, you've got to look at whatever is true, whatever is honorable, verse 8, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is a good report. And if there's any excellence and anything worthy of praise, let your mind dwell on these things. starts with your mind. You've got to get beyond reacting to your mood and your emotion. In Ephesians 5, Paul says, walk as children of light, learning what is pleasing to the Lord. And then down in verse 15, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil. So then do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Think. 1 Thessalonians 5:21, but examine everything carefully and hold fast to what is best. You see, Christian character at its highest level is a divinely implanted and growing love controlled by truth and wisdom that is therefore pursuing with its discernment and discrimination what is most excellent. And yet, most people will spend their whole life reacting like a knee-jerk reaction to whatever's bouncing around and doing whatever their mood dictates to them to do, accomplishing nothing that lasts because they never learn to discriminate about what is the excellent thing, whereas the truly godly are characterized by love and the pursuit of excellence. Take a look at your life. Are you really approving and pursuing what is excellent, or is it filled with trivia that matters not at all, but saps and sucks your energy? There's a third characteristic or essential in this process. That is integrity. Integrity. Love and excellence lead to integrity. Verse 10, in order to be sincere and blameless until the day of Christ. Now, the little phrase in order to be is, for you Greek students, hina with a subjunctive, which is a purpose clause. You are to love so that you can pursue excellence in order that, or for the purpose of being a person of integrity. And again, the sequence is made very obvious. These things are all sequential. Love, controlled by biblical truth and practical insight, leads to the pursuit of excellence, which generates personal and relational integrity. Now look at those two words in verse 10, in order to be sincere and blameless. They have a different meaning, a different emphasis that I want you to see. The word sincere is a very interesting word. It means genuine, but it has a possibility of a couple of different roots. Some think it is rooted in a word that means to sift. A grain would be put in a sieve and sifted until all the impurity was removed, and what came through would be the pure grain. And there is a possibility that this word has that root and that it means that all the impurity of your life has been sifted out, so you're pure, genuine, 100%. Now, on the other hand, it also could have as its root two words in the Greek, one word meaning son, the other meaning to judge, so that it literally in its root meaning has the idea of testing something by sunlight, testing something by sunlight. That, by the way, we don't know for sure if that's the root of alikrinēs, which is the Greek term, but it is the root of sincere, which is a Latin derivative. The Latin word is sinesera, and it literally means without wax. Now, let me explain what that means. A potter who was making a jar or a bowl or a plate or a dish of some kind would turn it on his wheel, and then when it was completed, he would take it and fire it, bake it, as you know. Frequently, because of some impurity in the clay or some error in judgment in terms of the temperature or whatever, it would come up with a crack. A cracked jar or pot or bowl or dish would be useless. But because of the money invested in it, the unscrupulous potters would try to cover up the crack. And they would take a hard wax and they would fill the crack with wax. And then they would cover it over with whatever they were using to coat or to paint the pot or the bowl. And so when any wise person went into the marketplace to buy a piece of pottery, they would typically hold the pottery up to the sunlight and rotate it to see if it was without wax, because the sunlight could shine through the crack and reveal the wax, which, of course, the first time anything heated was put in it would melt and it would be discovered as useless. A life, then, needs to be held up to the sunlight to determine whether it's got any flaws that are being falsely covered over by the wax of hypocrisy. That's the idea. That may well be the root of the word sincere. That certainly is behind the Latin concept sincere, which means without wax. And so just as in ancient times pottery was tested by holding it up to the sun, so our life needs to be tested as well to see if it has integrity. No flaw, no crack covered over by wax. You say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, just how it is in the church, folks, just how it is. Those people who would like us to believe that they are a real whole pot or a whole bowl or a whole dish or a whole jar. And they are not. There are cracks in their life. There's sin in their life, flaws in their life. But they have covered those over with the wax of churchianity, of religious ceremony, of religious activity. They cover it up. You put them into the heat of something and they'll melt and reveal the mark, reveal the crack, reveal the split. But they get along a long time without that discovery if the hostility or the persecution or the difficulty doesn't come. You don't want to be a life like that. You want to be a life of integrity. You want to be without wax. You want to be sincere, pure, without flaw, real, genuine, honest. All parts touching, like I've used the illustration of making bread. You throw everything in a pan that has to be in bread and stick it in the oven and you won't get bread. You left out one important thing. You have to mix it. You have to stir it so that everything touches everything else. Then you get bread. And the same thing is true in life. Integrity is when every part of your life touches every other part of your life and there's nothing in your life that's unrelated to what you believe or what you affirm or what you say your creed is. Everything has to touch everything else. That's integrity. That's integrity.
That's John MacArthur showing you how to let the joy of Christ rule your life. John is not only the featured Bible teacher here on Grace to You, he's also a pastor, author, and president of the Master's College and Seminary in Southern California. Today's lesson a part of his current series, Joy Rules. Now keep in mind, this study is available for you to order as a 6-CD album, and it's a great teaching series to share with your family or to place in your church's library. You can also download the series free of charge in the MP3 or transcript format from the website. Just pick up a copy as you contact us today.
Our address is Grace to You, P.O. Box 153, Ashford, Kent, TN248WE. And in the UK, dial toll-free by landline 0800 389 3958. And anywhere in Europe, reach us at 0044 1233 662 262. Remember, every message you hear on Grace to You, in fact, every message John MacArthur has preached, more than four decades of Bible teaching, is available for free download at gty.org.uk. About 3,000 messages, MP3 audio and transcripts, yours free of charge. Just go to gty.org.uk. And friend, something you need to know. The goal of Grace to You is simple: to help you clearly understand God's Word and equip you to minister in your home, church, workplace, wherever God gives you influence. We do that through John's careful, systematic, verse-by-verse teaching of biblical truth. To see all that's available from our Europe-wide ministry and to place an order, go to gty.org.uk. or call 0044 1233 662 262. And thanks for remembering we're listener supported. Now for John MacArthur and the staff, be here for another half hour of unleashing God's truth one verse at a time on the next Grace to You. Explore God's truth and deepen your understanding and application. John MacArthur's Unleashing God's Truth on every broadcast. Join him here on the next Grace to You.